another episode of Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the remainder of this half hour, and this week's episode is about parents. So to be clear, this week's episode is entitled About Parents. It's not just about parents, but the title of this week's episode is two words, about parents, and that evokes two distinct aspects that we're going to focus on this week. The first is the word about, in that all the films we're going to be talking about have the word about in the title, or at least at the front of the title. And this is a little bit of a sacred cinema first, folks. It's the first week, I think, in the last couple of years we've been doing this show, where we're actually going to hone in on the importance and the point and the effect of a movie title. And how that can be significant about sort of where the viewer or where the audience's attention is focused when you watch a film. And it might be one of those things that you kind of don't think about too much very often when you're watching a film. You know, it's not up there the whole time like it is in a book when you're reading it at the top of the page every time. But it is, I think it is quite an influential thing in terms of, you know, sometimes, especially in a complicated film, a lot of things can be going on, a lot of different, it can be multifaceted. It can be difficult to know sort of where you need to ground your attention. If you think about maybe some of your favorite films and you sort of rethink how you might think about those, particularly after first watch, if you haven't talked to many people about it, how differently you might view a film if it had a different title than the one it has. So, like my favorite film, for example, is La La Land, right? And when we think of the title of that film, La La Land, obviously La La Land, no, Los Angeles, is directing your attention to Los Angeles, what the city of Los Angeles is and how it, what it means for people and what it means as a society. But also it has that double entendre of La La Land, you know, the sense of gaga-ness, you know, dreaminess. That's all in the end, you know, a fantastical kind of situation because people that go there have big dreams and that sort of thing. If that film was alternatively titled something like, if it was just like called Los Angeles, like it wouldn't have that dreamy connotation, or if it was called something like The Jazz Man, you could still make that exact same film, but you wouldn't think so much about maybe the Emma Stone character or the movie making aspect of it. You think simply about, and simply you could call it like The Actress, and you wouldn't think so much about the jazz part of it and that sort of thing. And I think what these three films that we're going to talk about this week, that they all ground us in a particular character and a particular focus. And I think if they didn't have the word about in them, we might actually be drawn to other aspects of the films potentially. You know, we can never know, and you know, unless you've never seen any of these films before and you sort of give yourself the Men in Black treatment and forget what the names of the titles are. But I do have a view that the movie titles can have a very important and they're important effect, and they're definitely worth taking notice of. And now the second aspect of this week is parents. All of these films pretty much center on parents, and then we could have done a lot of films that also have like about and then a parental element to them. About a Boy, the Hugh Grant film, would have been very apt. I also considered maybe talking about Ellie, we've actually done that it would have been about a year ago now. We did the Middle Eastern episode with special guest Sarah Barry. So we can't do that one again, or at least not for a while. So we're going to talk about the films in just a second. They're all films that center on parenting or family life to some degree, or at least it's a massive part of the film. And they all have about in the title, and we'll go through all of them and why that aspect of the title kind of changes our way of looking at the films, how it directs our attention, and maybe almost misdirects what we could otherwise be, or misdirects us in a way that means that we're not focusing on things or aspects of the films that we might otherwise want to focus on, and vice versa as the show progresses. So the first one we're going to talk about is a new film directed by Laura Taruso. It's called About My Father, written and starring comedian Sebastian Maniscalco. We're then going to move on to Pedro Almodovar's very classic 1999 film, very famous film, All About My Mother. And then we're going to finish off with Richard Curtis's 2013 romantic comedy About Time, starring Domhnall Gleeson and Rachel McAdams. But let's kick things off now with About My Father, the new Sebastian Maniscalco film. So if we're going to focus on the title to begin with, About My Father, it's kind of got two meanings there. So it's kind of like that plays on like the common expression of being like, about my father, you know, like just giving you a bit of a word of warning, you know, it sort of evokes this kind of watch outness about him. You know, he's a bit of a weirdo. He's a bit much, guys. I hope it's not going to be too much trouble. But then also sort of the double meaning there is that, you know, it's a film and it's called About My Father. And so the film is about Sebastian Maniscalco's father. And as you can guess, if you haven't seen the trailer or seen the film yet, it's a kind of typical rom-com about two people who are bringing their families together before they're getting married, and they're from different worlds. You've got Sebastian Maniscalco, his father was an immigrant Italian, played by Robert De Niro, and then his fiance's family are like this hoity-toity kind of political old money family that live in, I think it's Virginia or Maryland, or one of those East Coast states. And so it's a very archetypal narrative, which we've seen a million times, with this one sort of playing out plays into all the hysterics one can hope for in watching a film about Italians. And I can say that because my last name is Bernasconi. But in terms of like the takeaways from this film, because it's a pretty like, it hasn't got great reviews and it's a pretty standard like rom-com, but there was a certain aspect of this film that I've found to be quite fascinating in the day since seeing it. And interestingly, you know, this film is directed by a woman, but it almost has this kind of like innate patriarchal quality to it in a lot of ways. So the main way I think it does that is there's this almost, I don't want to use the word incessant, but it's like this continual narration from Maniscalco's character throughout the film. And it's a rom-com, so we don't need too much explanation. It's a very simple plot. We get explanations of the subtext of the film, that, you know, the subtext is so undeniably clear, and we get these constant explanations of it to the point that it's almost absurd and funny. Like, there's like moments where, like, you know, there's a clash between the two families, and that we'll just get this moment of narration where it's like, so there I was trying to impress my fiance's family, but my dad was making a fool of himself. And you're like, yeah, Seb, we get it, mate. Like, we just saw him drop the chocolate cake on his pants. Like, you don't need to like tell us every time something awkward happens and you know, like, it needs to be explained. It's like we're 5 years old. So it kind of has this patronizing, you know, mansplaining kind of quality to it. It actually reminded me a lot of, I made a short film in high school, and I won't name the person that did this. It wasn't my father himself, but it was a fatherly kind of figure in my life that actually gave me a suggestion, which is at the start of the film, just have a moment where I just explain what happens or what it's about, just like in a form of narration. And I feel there's almost like this, I'm going to use some very general language this week, and I hope it doesn't offend anybody, but there was this sort of like inherently masculine quality, just assume that other people kind of like won't understand things if they're done in a way that's even like somewhat symbolic or metaphorical or aesthetic, rather than in sort of blunt words and phrases. It's like, oh, you just need to explain things to people better, they won't quite get it. But also, like, you know, like, I think the politics of the film is a little bit kind of masculine as well. Like, for a film set in 2023, it's kind of unashamedly, like, not political. Like, it doesn't have that rebellious kind of, like, anti-establishment vibe that every other film since 2017 has had. Like, for a film that has, like, a plantation-esque East Coast old money estate right at the center of it, and it's full of white people and stuff like that, there's very much a sense of, like, oh, don't bring other people down, kind of focus on yourself, focus on bringing yourself up. There's a real kind of sense of like, you know, don't try and constantly critique the system, work on yourself as an individual. Kind of like a sort of like an Ayn Randian kind of like, don't be, you know, be affected by the fact that other people have more money than you. That, you know, they're not just bad. They're not bad people just because. I mean that's not a uniquely masculine thing, but I think it does kind of play into it a little bit. Like, it's like sort of do your best on your own, make something of yourself on your. It's not really like looking after the community in a sense, but probably more so than that. And flowing from that is like there's an aesthetic choice in this film which kind of glamorizes all of that plantation-esque East Coast old money estate kind of thing. And so it does have this, what I would say, it's like a very kind of like classically conservative old school America anti-revolution, anti-rebellion kind of sense to it, which I think is, I'm not going to say that's uniquely masculine, but it's more masculine than it is feminine, I think you would say. Like, it's like got the opposite kind of vibes, like Barbie, for example. So the film kind of had this kind of like somewhat pragmatic kind of very hard, like very barely cinematic look about it. It's almost kind of like Apatowian. You know, people often make criticisms of like those Judd Apatow films of the 2000s, how like they don't have any kind of interest in aesthetics and colors and making, you know, having a palette and having a distinct, it's just a sort of very pragmatic shots of people talking back and forth. I mean, a lot of rom-coms are like that, but there isn't like any sweet music. There isn't any sort of like beautiful, like scenes in Rome and beautiful people eating and drinking by it's like sort of like yacht clubs and golf clubs. It's kind of got almost like a Caddyshackness to it. But the result, despite how cynical you may have thought I was in saying all that, it really is a tribute and kind of a sweet tribute. It's a bit of a love letter, or probably better put, a thank you note to Maniscalco's father. And it is a little bit heartwarming because you can tell that in real life he does owe a lot to his immigrant father, and it's sweet that it's done through the power of cinema. It's very nice. But I think from talking about all this, we sort of get a sense that we're a little bit off balance here. Maybe we need to give a bit of love to the other side of the parental dichotomy. And before we do that, let's just remind you about listening to Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM, People Powered Radio. I'm your host, Jimmy Bernasconi, for the remainder of this half hour, and be sure to stay tuned for more quality radio content here on 2XX, but also jump onto our website to consider sponsoring the show or any of our shows, or consider subscribing to 2XX. That would be very much something that we'd love from fathers, mothers, and everything in between. But speaking of mothers, All About My Mother, directed by Pedro Almodovar from 1999, and just to focus on the title of this film, you know, I think, you know, in it being called All About My Mother, it evokes a sense of, you know, this is a single film about Almodovar's mother, because, you know, the boy in the film is a young creative, and there's a sense of authorial intrusion, and that's actually quite conspicuous, or, you know, by the end of the film. But on another level, it's also like, it almost has this sense that Almodovar's life has been all about his mother. And further than that, you know, further on that is that everything is all about, and when I say everything, not just everything in his life, but everything is all about mothers. And as I mentioned before, these conspicuous references, you know, the fact that the title of the film is All About My Mother, there's like a very obvious reference to All About Eve, which is a film that we've talked about on the show, and how it ties in with Almodovar's love for Bette Davis, who we find out, who gets referenced in the film a couple of times. And then if you haven't seen All About Eve, that is sort of all about, you know, two women in show business, one kind of overtaking the other one, and this being this all-consuming, omnipresent kind of omnipresence of Eve, you know, throughout the culture. There's a sense of all-consumingness and omnipotence in this film with respect to motherhood and matriarchy and that sort of thing. But we're gonna sort of peel at that a little bit more in just a moment. Let's just focus specifically on the plot for those who haven't seen the film. The main character is Manuela, and she is a mourning mother who travels back to Barcelona after the death of her son. And she sort of, when she gets back to Barcelona, she sort of encounters all different kinds of women from all walks of life. And it ultimately is this sort of like this, I wouldn't just say it's simply a tribute to Almodovar's mother, but a celebration of all things motherly, all things matriarchal. And I think you could go as far to say sort of all things classically feminine or female. And there's a couple of ways that it does that, and it's a really dense film, and I don't want to miss much, but we've only got so much time to talk about it. I'm just kind of going to limit it to the characterization and also the visuals. But you could go back through this film and find all sorts of things. I mean, there's interesting questions around like the body, and which is very like Almodovarian, and questions around like she works as like someone who she like works in the health. The health industry, and there's also these kinds of questions about like giving people bad news and the psychologizing around that stuff, and that it actually happens to her in her own life, and like there's always like a biological element to his films. If you've seen like The Skin I Live In, for example, like I'm not going to get into all that. I just said I wouldn't, and we started to, but I'm going to mainly focus on the characterization and the visuals of this film. So in the characterization, I want to use this phrase. It almost explores this idea of kind of like the chameleonic mother, So Manuela is literally a mother, but she becomes like a makeshift mother, not just for the Penelope Cruz character, who also has a real mother who is in the film, but she also becomes like a makeshift mother for Penelope Cruz's child, who she is weirdly kind of also like the mother for when you find out who the father of the mother of the child is. It's kind of like she's sliding, I want to use the phrase sliding scales, but I don't mean sliding scales like along a lateral plane. I mean like, if you imagine like fish scales, you know, how they go on top of each other, like tiles on a roof. It's almost like Manuela is like the top tile or the top scale. And whenever she's needed, she can just kind of slide over a couple of people and just be the mother of the next person down the rung whenever she kind of needs to be. And it's not in a sort of sexist way. It's in like a very beautiful way. It's like it's really just kind of like a way of where motherhood is simply just feminine compassion. Let's put it that way. It's simply just compassion when done by a woman is basically all it, but it has a very beautiful quality to it. And this kind of like chameleonic ability she has, I think it's kind of symbolic of like the perpetual or like eternal need or even yearning for, I guess, for the maternal or for matriarchy in any form we can get it. So this is a very progressive film. It's not so much about like how important mothers are, but rather like we all have a yearning for the matriarchal, for the maternal on some level by someone. And so it's definitely expanding that definition of what and who could be a mother and in what case. Like it's certainly not limited to sex either. So it so brilliantly kind of builds that bridge between, you know, like you know, classical and traditional ideas around like the importance of motherhood, which you would say is like a Sound of Music kind of way, like an important human, conservative, traditional thing. But in a very progressive way, sort of reconceives what a mother could be and who could be one's mother, and kind of you can be a mother without being a woman or without being an actual mother. It's very clever in how it does it, and also celebrates that. And then also in its characterization, it really does explore as well in just a 2-hour film the spectrum of femininity. So we've got the archetypal nurturing mother in the Manuela character, but we also have like the feisty entertainer and her haunted lover who's in the play, the Streetcar Named Desire play that's on throughout the film. You've also got the charismatic transgender friend. Oh, I know that character's become somewhat controversial over the years, but at the time, imagine it was quite celebrated. You've also got the Penelope Cruz character, who's like the innocent and pure social worker type. But then you've got her like overly civil mother, who we can all relate to. And then even like the father in the you know, the one father figure in this film isn't a father as well. If you've seen the film, you know what I mean by that. And so we make an entire film that like, where there's kind of like no men really, like the film is fully functional without any men. It almost is like the real Barbie world or the real Barbie land from that film, the recent one. But then speaking, you know, departing away from characterization and speaking about the visuals of the film, it has that typical Almodovarian bright block color, primary color. It's a feast of colors and reds and yellows and I don't mean to speak too generally, but I think the effect of it visually, it has a much more emotive or emotional or impassioned or aesthetically enriching kind of atmosphere. And it's very interesting to watch in the wake of speaking of Barbie and thinking about how, you know, a lot of people have come out of the movie being like, I don't know what it was about. I don't know what they were saying. I need to watch it again to actually know what happened in the plot. But I loved it just for what it looked like. And so I think this film is similar. I think you can go into the film and have no idea what actually happened, but just enjoy the experience so much just because of the colours and how they're used and how sort of tasty and delicious they all are and how they work together and all the characters, how their costumes match the backgrounds. Like, I'm not a person that usually picks up on that stuff, really. I don't really like watch movies for that as much as other aspects, but I certainly did in watching this film. And that's certainly a strength. And I think that also sort of celebrates a much less austere or, you know, we were speaking before about how, you know, about my father, there isn't really... this is almost a kind of masculine ignorance of cinema and of being cinematic and cinematography and being, things being visually and aesthetically interesting. Whereas, like, I think this film in its femininity is much more appreciative and respectful of visual and visuals and beauty in a kind of classic sense. So we have kind of two completely antithetical forces here that don't really have any room for each other, right? Like, interestingly, in About My Father, the mother is, like, completely absent. And interestingly, in All About My Mother, there's, like, no men in the movie, and the men who are in the movie aren't even men, you know? If you've seen the film, you know what I mean. And so you always want to say, like, you know, it's like a bit of a Tree of Life deal. You know, we need the masculine, but we need the feminine. But, like, neither of these films would agree with that. Like they're at odds on that. And we could just say, you know, All About My Father is just a silly rom-com, and All About My Mother is like a serious film, so that one should take the cake kind of thing. But, and we could say, you know, maybe motherhood is more important than fatherhood, but that seems a bit silly either as well. I think we maybe need to look at this from another dimension. Right, this question about parents and the role of parents and parenting and what that means for the human race and matriarchy versus patriarchy, etc. So let's finish things off now with About Time by Richard Curtis. And if you're thinking About Time, it's not really about parents, it's about time. That's the whole reason we're talking about it. We need to sort of look at this from a completely different angle, right? So the title, a common phrase, about time, right? A sense of urgency. It's about time you went to the shops. It's about time you got your shoes fixed, right? But on the other hand, it's also, you know, the film is about time. And although it's a romance time, it really kind of is a film that's really about time and the impact of time. But speaking of romance, it's a film about a guy, Tim, played by Donald Gleason, who can travel in time and uses it to pretty much track down the girl of his dreams and marry her and have build a life with her. And while it is a romance, there's a very strong emphasis on parents. And if you've seen the film, you know I'm not forcing a square peg through a round hole there, even though we're kind of going to view it as if that's kind of like the central relationship of the film. It kind of, for the convenience of this episode, but it kind of actually is kind of the central relationship of the film. Like, Tim's relationship with his father, played by Bill Nighy, is extremely crucial to the film, and the whole climax of the film kind of hinges on his relationship with his father and his family more broadly, and also, like, Tim's new family and who Tim is in his new family. But I don't want to get ahead of ourselves too quickly. So in terms of like the main takeaways and how we can kind of reconcile some of the dilemmas that have cropped up this week, I want to kind of call back actually to an episode we did a couple of weeks ago on Fantasmic Figures, where we talked about Mr. Nobody. And we talked about how like the unreal people that we imagine, you know, our future selves or other people in the world when we can't see them and our projections of what they might be doing and what they might be thinking. When we talked about Mr. Nobody, the Jared Leto film, we kind of got to this point where like, well, people, like our imagined versions of people actually can be real if we kind of deal with time in a certain way. Like we might imagine a certain person might be doing something, but we can't prove that they're actually doing it or whether they actually want to do it. But there are actions that we can make and allow entropy and time to sort of take its course. So those people actually do kind of end up being that person. Like we can bring people into this world and into life through our actions in conjunction with time and entropy. And I feel like the questions that we're raising this week could also be answered in that same way. So I think going back to sort of what we've been talking about this week, the film certainly celebrates both, you know, the matriarchal and the patriarchal. It's a classic Richard Curtis boy meets girl film. You know, they're both important. Rachel McAdams is important for Donald Gleason's character, and they kind of, you know, complete each other in that kind of classic, I mentioned Tree of Life before, that kind of, you know, Adam and Eve-y kind of, you know, heteronormative way. But the twist here is that it kind of questions how one might maximize their enjoyment of life or the tree of life or life in general, if they could manipulate one of the key dimensions of life, which is time. Like if you could, let's take Sebastian Maniscalco's character from All About My Father, or if we took Pedro Almodovar through the lens of his film and talked about, you know, how he would, if he could go back in time and do whatever he wanted, if you were to just look at those films through the lens that they force us to look themselves through, like for the Sebastian Maniscalco film, just through the lens of the importance of fatherhood, well, you kind of guess that if he could go back in time, the thing he might do is go back and thank his father or like study his father or like, you know, like that's the lens that film forces us through. And that's kind of like, that's his sort of key paramount virtue. And that's what he would do. And similarly in Pedro Almodovar's universe, you might think that, you know, he might use the power of time travel to go back and hug his mum or learn something more from his mum or spend more time with his mother. That's the lens through his film. But in this film, in About Time, And for a while, Tim does both those things, but I think it gets us to a different place because it's putting a different emphasis, not putting an emphasis so much on how great fathers are or how great mothers are. It's saying, well, you know, ultimately, if we really do want to maximize our lives, how would we manipulate time? And I think it does sort of steel man some of these arguments we've lifted up just a second ago there, like because it gives him this very idyllic childhood, right? So he does go back a lot, and there's some really beautiful scenes where he does go back to his childhood and spends time with his father. And he's got this beautiful house and beautiful garden and a beach, and the scenes where he's playing ping pong with Bill Nye are very important, and there's some very key scenes there. But by the end of the film, the kind of moral is not so much that we should constantly slip into a permanent status of a permanent childish status, the status of being a child, but kind of to allow time to pass, to allow it to almost, you know, vaporize our child status, you know, pretty much demolish that, kind of ask us to hand in our child status card and take on a new, more important role as time passes. So let's try and tie everything together here, because I feel like we're not going off track here, but we're kind of looking at things in a different dimension all of a sudden. We've been talking so much about the power of matriarchy or the power of patriarchy sort of from the angle of looking up. And now we're kind of looking at it from a completely different angle. So let's try and tie everything together. Well, when we talked about My Father, we talked about how most of us, we talked about how that film works because most of us do have a deep sense of respect for our fathers. And we like it when people respect their fathers and pay tribute to their fathers. Like to the extent that people almost see fatherhood to be so important that they patronizingly force other people, almost to a frustrating extent sometimes, they force people's attention to how important good fathering is and how good fathers are. And sometimes, you know, that might lead, you know, you could think of it in the real world, it might lead a mother to be quite frustrated that people are constantly putting value and emphasis on the importance of good fathers and how good a good father can be, and good on this father for doing this sort of thing. But, you know, because of all that, equally on the other side of things, you know, we all do also do adore our mothers as well, don't we? You know, fathers are great, but mothers are fantastic too. So much so as well. If you think about, you know, the fact that we all came from a mother at some point, Mother Earth as well as the, you know, the constant mother to us all, there's almost a way to conceive of the world and everything in such a way that we celebrate motherhood and matriarchy almost like it's an omnipotent entity, sort of an omnipotent source of energy for all people, for all things, for everything. Everything is really at its core something that is a product of some form of motherhood. But perhaps it might be worth looking at things from a completely different dimension, in that while a childish gaze, and I don't mean childish in the sense of like being immature, but I mean like childish is like the gaze of a child, allows us to see the world through a particularly innocent and warm and cozy lens, time is undeniable, and so are its implications, right? And they kind of need to be accepted. That's how the world kind of works, to the extent that perhaps we need to remember that although we should always love our parents and we should love them as much as possible and constantly appreciate them and let them know how much they mean to us, life is not just about loving one's father. And that's not just about loving one's mother. It's about those things, but it's not just about those things. Because eventually life will let us know that it's about time to grow up and be someone else's mummy or daddy. Well, unfortunately, that's all we've got time for this week on Sacred Cinema here on 2XX 98.3 FM People Powered Radio. Stay tuned for more quality radio programming here on 2XX, and also consider jumping onto our website to consider subscribing to the station or sponsoring the show or any of our shows. Also, think about getting in contact with me. You can email me at contact@jimmyberlusconi.com. We've got some cool recommendations coming up in the next couple of weeks, so you'll have to have a listen. We'll chat then. See ya.